When we pay attention to or focus on a sound, this too temporarily enlarges its cortical representation, and it becomes sharper and clearer, at least for a second or two. Could such a concentration or focus allow Jacob to correct his misperception of tones? He thought about this and said yes. When he was aware of distortions, he could indeed sometimes diminish them by an effort of will. The danger, he said, was that he might be unaware of them. He compared this sort of voluntary alteration to the way in which one might will oneself to see a particular aspect of a visual illusion, such as the face vase illusion. Was this explicable wholly in terms of the dynamic mapping of tones in the cortex and the ability to enlarge or shift these in relation to circumstances? Jacob felt his perception changing as he pulled the note in and as it escaped him once again. Could he actually be retuning his cochlea, if only for a second or two? What might seem a preposterous notion has gained support from recent work, demonstrating that there are massive efferent connections, the olivocochlear bundles, going from the brain to the cochlea and thence to the outer hair cells. The outer hair cells serve, among other things, to calibrate or tune the inner hair cells, and they have an exclusively efferent nerve supply. They do not transmit nerve impulses to the brain. They get orders from the brain. Thus, one has to see the brain and ear as forming a single functional system, a two-way system, with the ability not only to modify the representation of sounds in the cortex, but to modulate the output of the cochlea itself. The power of attention to pick out a tiny but significant sound in our environment, to home in on a single soft voice in the ambient din of a crowded restaurant, is very remarkable and seems to depend on this ability to modulate cochlear function as well as on purely cerebral mechanisms. The ability of the mind and brain to exercise efferent control over the cochlea can be heightened by training and musical activities and is, as Christophe Michel et al. Have shown, particularly powerful in musicians. In Jacob's case, of course, this ability is constantly in training, as he has to confront and control his pitch distortions every day. Discovering that he had at least some voluntary control made Jacob feel less helpless, less the victim of an inexorable deterioration, and more hopeful. Could he hope for a longer-lasting improvement? Could his musician's brain, with its vivid and accurate memory of pitch, its exact and detailed knowledge of how things should sound, could this musical brain not compensate for and transcend the aberrations of a damaged cochlea? But a year later, he reported that his distortions were worse, more erratic. Some notes have a greater pitch shift, sometimes as much as a minor third or more. He said that if he played a note repeatedly, it might shift its pitch, but if it began off pitch, he could sometimes pull it in at least for a while. He used the term audio illusion for the two notes, the true and the phantom or distorted one, and spoke of how they might interweave and alternate with each other, like a moiré pattern or the two aspects of an ambiguous figure. This shifting or alternation was much more obvious now that the tonal disparities had increased from a quarter tone to a full tone or more. The range of distortion, too, was creeping down. The two highest octaves, he said, are more and more useless to me. Jacob's cochlear function, it was clear, was still deteriorating, but he continued to play and compose in a lower register. "You work with the ears you have," he said wryly, "not the ears you want." Though Jacob was an affable man, it was nonetheless evident that the last year had been a difficult one. He had trouble rehearsing his own compositions, which he could not hear in reality as clearly as he heard them in his mind's ear. He could not listen to music in the higher ranges and experience it without distortions, though he could still enjoy Bach cello suites, for instance, which stay in a lower register. Overall, he was finding that music doesn't sound as delicious as it used to. and lacked the glorious, spacious resonance it once had. Jacob's father, also a musician, had become very deaf as he grew older. Would Jacob, finally, like Beethoven, be unable to hear any music at all, except in his own mind?